Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to the Truth Is Out There, Voice of the People radio show on the Truth Is Out There, Voice of the People media network on Block Talk Radio. And this is your host, Joe Golnut, and I'm going to introduce you to my co-host, and then we got a very special guest, and we're going to get right to business. Let me introduce you to my co-host, Scarlett. How are you doing, Scarlett?
I am doing great, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing great, and we're looking forward to this gentleman here because we're going to go deep into the mindset of the 45th and probably the 47th president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. We got a very special guest. This gentleman is a doctor. He wrote a book called Psychologically Sound, the Mind of Donald J. Trump, and let me introduce you to Dr. Sheldon Ross. How are you doing, Doctor?
I'm well, thank you. Hope you are both in good shape, too.
We're doing great out here. Kind of a rainy here in South Florida right now, but, you know, that's just normal rainy season type stuff. But anyway...
it's quite sunny here. I'm in sunny Southern California, Los Angeles. Beautiful weather today.
There you go. That's great. We're on opposite coast. This is one of the great things that we do is we talk to people all over the country. In fact, we get people all over the world. So this is very important. You have a book called Psychologically Sound, The Mind of Donald J. Trump. Can you introduce how you decided to get to that book, how you wrote it, and then let's go into depth about the book and how you find them psychologically sound?
Okay, Joe. It's a kind of interesting circumstance. I've been primarily a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst for about 45 or 50 years, and I was at Harvard and Boston and quite ensconced in teaching and in my clinical practice, and had never really engaged much in political interests. I was so absorbed with the psychiatric world and the world of my patients and teaching. But after I retired, moved out to Los Angeles, during Trump's, the beginning of Trump's presidency, I got a call from a very eminent person, Gerald Post. May he rest in peace. He passed away about a year ago or so. This man was what we call in my end of the world a forensic psychiatrist. He was interested in politics and the law and the applications of psychiatry in it. And he was in the CIA for over 20 years. And he had developed personality profiles of some of the key enemies of our government. He drew up a profile of Kim Jong-un's father, and most important profile he did, in which the government acted on it, several governments, was his profile of Saddam Hussein. So I had never met him personally. I knew of his writings. He wrote extensively. But he called me, and he had heard from people in Washington. He was based in Washington, in D.C.
Okay.
He had heard from people in Washington that I was conservative. Now, I hadn't really spent too much time in Washington. Early in my career, for several years, I was at the National Institute of Health. I think I was there before Fauci, thank God.
But,
so people in Washington knew me, and I was academic. I've published a lot in psychiatry. But they knew that I had conservative views, and he wanted to write a book with me. He was an ardent Democrat, very anti-Trump, and he had the idea that it would be very useful for the country if two people, two prominent psychiatrists, would write a book together and engage in a dialogue. Now, at first, I begged off it because I had never really been much involved in politics, and all I knew about Donald Trump was I'd been in Trump Tower. I grew up in New York, so I knew who he was, but I really didn't know much about him beyond that, and I begged off. I told him, while I appreciated the importance of it, I thought that maybe I was not the right person because I didn't have in-depth understanding. However, a number of people, friends, but particularly my family, thought that the country was in such turmoil. I had just retired, moved out in L.A., and it was probably very important that two such people who had opposing views, if we could write a book and dialogue together, it might be a model for the rest of the country, which increasingly was polarized, and that polarization, as both of you and Scarlett know, has only increased. So I finally said yes. I said yes, I would do it on the condition that he had to give me 4 or 5 months to do a lot of reading and research. And in that time, I read everything that Donald Trump had written. You know, he did 18 books. A lot of it was, you know.
That's a lot of reading in 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. So I read all of that stuff. I read all the interviews. There are countless interviews available in the search on the Internet. And I read a lot of what the opposing people felt. So I felt I had a fair understanding of various angles of the mind of Donald Trump. And he's also a New Yorker. I'm a New Yorker, and a little hard to understand for people who didn't grow up in New York in those days, but there's a special kind of understanding one New Yorker has of another that often evaporates when you go elsewhere. Well, I worked on this book with him for about a year and a half. It didn't work out well. What was really quite interesting was that this individual, highly sophisticated, highly knowledgeable, never actually really believed that I was in favor of Donald Trump. He thought I was doing it all tongue-in-cheek, which really wasn't the case. But it demonstrated to me that people who have the opposing view have no way of understanding or comprehending why somebody else might be supportive of Donald Trump. So even though discussing with him and he listened to all my ideas, he was on a completely different track. I think, though, the real reason I finally withdrew from writing a book with him, perhaps if I still lived in the Washington area, as I did at NIH, perhaps I would have completed it. But I had written several chapters, one which I really loved about Citizen Trump, which is about his love of the film Citizen Kane. And I was going to put the whole thing away, and somehow I felt, I remember putting several chapters in a lower drawer in my desk thinking, this is not right. After I go someplace else and pass away, my sons, I have three sons, my sons are going to empty out my drawers, and they're going to say, look at these chapters that Dad wrote. Why didn't he ever publish this? And that thought made me think, nope, I've got to really capitalize and expand. And by this point, I really loved a lot of aspects of Donald Trump and his life and decided I would write a book separate on my own on Trump, which I finally did. So that's how the book, that was the inception of the book. But let me pause a moment, Joe and Scarlett.
Okay.
Do you have some questions you want to ask me before we go further?
Well, are you surprised?
Where in New York are you from?
I grew up in Brooklyn, in the Brownsville section, a very rough area, which remains rough to this very day. Still hasn't been gentrified. Same area that Mike Tyson came from. I lived a few blocks from Tyson.
Nice. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I'm from Flatbush.
Oh, what part of Flatbush?
Ocean Avenue and Avenue N.
Oh, well, that's really near Bensonhurst. I know that area well because I went to Brooklyn College, which is not far from where you're describing.
That's 8H, Avenue H and Nostrand Avenue.
Oh, sure, yes. Nostrand Avenue was a stop on the IRT.
yes. Yeah.
No, I remember that well.
So, your perspective on New Yorkers, understand New Yorkers, you're correct.
I'm glad
you survive in New York, you survive
anywhere. A compatriot there, Scarlett.
Yeah.
There's a certain understanding of lingo, the language, the humor.
Attitude, life, environment, people. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's a lot different today,
Jonathan. How long did it take you to write your book?
I'd say I must have, well, if you count the time I was writing with Dr. Post, I'd say a year and a half or two, something like that, to finally put it together in its final form. Because a lot of that time was spent in research. And understanding.
Did you self-publish or have a publishing house?
I don't understand what you're asking. I publish articles in various journals.
No, the book.
The book. The book was published by a conservative publisher, the Post Hill Press.
Very nice.
They're in Nashville. Well, they're a very well established, well followed publishing house. So it's a standard publisher. It was a good publisher. But you may have some questions about what questions do you want me to address in terms of Trump and his life?
Okay. A couple of things. First, one, when you first started out, and were you surprised of all the stuff that he was doing? Were you surprised about when you were doing your investigation, your research? Were you surprised of the things that he did?
You know, it's very interesting what you say, Joe. I think I was impressed by what he did, but I can't say I was actually surprised. Somehow, you know, I knew Trump Tower. I knew he developed a number of buildings in New York. So in the back of my brain, I always had the idea that this was a very substantial real estate creator. And I was kind of filling in the blanks and reading about it. So in that sense, I was not surprised. I think what did surprise me was the degree to which, unlike any other candidate, to which he transposed his business sense into a political sense and was actually successful at it. You know, Ross Perot had tried it. Other people had tried it. And as a matter of fact, Jamie Dimon, or the chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, after Trump was elected, Dimon commented in an interview that he had always thought of going into politics and even possibly running for president, but he thought that he didn't have sufficient background, that he first needed to be something like a governor of New York, and that he was stunned by the fact that Donald Trump proved him wrong without ever having held political office before. He carried off the greatest political feat in American politics. He became president. So Jamie Dimon was kind of surprised and stunned at it. I was impressed, but somehow, I guess I have respect for the high intelligence of Donald Trump, and it seemed to me that somebody could do it. Unlike a Jamie Dimon, I didn't have the same opinion. I think it was extraordinary because it was the citizen who became president. Like coming up from the soil itself, it's a very American tradition. Trump, not a farmer, but when you think of it in terms of the fact that he had never been in politics and then became president of the United States, it's like the proverbial revolutionary soldier, you know, who went to war against the Brits and became a lieutenant or a brigadier general or something of that nature. It's a very much an American thing that Donald Trump did. I don't think the Democrats quite appreciate the fact that the people put forth a person rather than a politician to become president. So that aspect of his conversion, I don't think adequately is understood in the American sense, in the sense of the that image of the revolutionary soldier with that one-shot rifle on his arm coming out from the farm, you know, to do what needed to be done. And that's what Trump did. So I can't say I was surprised, Joe, but I was impressed. Let me not dominate this talk. Intersperse with any answers you want. And also, he's a very religious man, which was quite unusual. And that's never portrayed much in the mass media. We can talk about that a little.
He is somewhat, well, he believes in God. He believes in right to life. He converted to that because initially back, if you go back in time, he actually was pro-choice a long time, and then he flipped over to pro-life, and he was one of the biggest pro-life presidents ever, and he got the three justices that overturned, that got Roe v. Wade was overturned. He also moved the embassy, U.S. embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, got the Abraham Accords, which started to make peace there. And this is a guy that's able to do that. So he has a lot of religious beliefs. And what's your take?
Well, you touch on a very important aspect of Donald Trump. He has what I have called, in an article I wrote about this aspect, he has Christian charisma. He has true Christian charisma. If you've ever watched videos of his talks in various churches, I'm thinking now of one particular Baptist church, he is on fire in the pulpit, and he portrays himself as truly a man of faith. You know, Trump says there were only two mentors in his entire life, and he uses that word very, very seriously. One mentor was his father, Fred Trump Sr., and the other mentor is Norman Vincent Peale. For almost 50 years, Trump attended Peale's church at the Marble Collegiate Church on Fifth Avenue, and Peale mesmerized him. He said that he could sit through an entire sermon again. Of course, Peale was an extraordinary speaker. I might remind your audience that he had a bestseller in America for several years called The Power of Positive Thinking, and you can still find that in paperback at any airport, you know, that you go into. It's still a very widely read book. But Peale loved Trump, and Trump loved Peale. And about that issue you mentioned about pro-choice and pro-life, let's remember the fact that he openly acknowledges that he only married his second wife, Marla Maples, because she was pregnant and he didn't believe in abortion. He actually didn't want to marry her. That's the shortest of his marriages. But he put his money where his mouth is and married her because she was pregnant. The child of that pregnancy was Tiffany, who recently graduated law school. As Trump says, we can always use another lawyer in the Trump family. So on the issue of faith, he has very deep faith, very deep beliefs. And that aspect of him and his spirituality about it and his devotion to Peale and acknowledgement of him as a mentor, you look through a number, and I can do it for you, you look through a number of the things that Peale wrote about, particularly in The Power of Positive Thinking, and you can hear the same words, the same principles come back in Trump's basic political philosophy. He's translated Peale's Power of Positive Thinking into a political philosophy. So that's an answer to your question about his faith and his religiosity. He's extraordinarily sincere. This is not some charlatan who's putting on some notion that I'm, you know, a pro-life or believe in God or America, one nation under God. He actually sincerely believes it. He was a very devoted a parishioner at the Marble Collegiate Church. That's where his weddings were performed. Actually, it's the same place that Nixon's daughter was married. Many prominent Republicans attended Norman Vincent Peale's church during all those years. But let me pause for a moment. I may be stimulating some questions or thoughts in you.
My line would be, this is his character, his faith, it resonates with the crowds. And also, this is how he's able to tell his story and everything. Everything he's done is with a purpose. This is a guy that probably has the best political instincts and any kind of instincts that I ever known. I'm 68 years old, so I've been around for many years. And now all the people, politics, all the things around his instinct, his political instinct and his regular instinct is pretty well on spot. And that's coming from within. That's his mindset, isn't it?
Yes. Now, that touches on a particular aspect of Donald Trump's personality. Now, the Democrats would often have you believe that Trump is ignoramus, incapable of reading. But I want to tell you that Trump was a voracious reader during all the years that he lived in that penthouse above his business in Trump Tower. Unlike most politicians or wealthy people who live out in the suburbs, up in Westchester, New Yorkers, wealthy New Yorkers live, or they live in Connecticut. Uh-huh. He lived right on Fifth Avenue in the middle of the people, right in the densest part of Fifth Avenue. But he's a man who's only slept constitutionally 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. And he would spend the night reading and very often books. I want to mention that one year, New York Magazine gave him the award for the best literary letter to the literary editor of the year, in which he discussed a few books. He discussed John Updike and those. So he mm-hmm. he read vociferously and voraciously. And one of the books that actually impressed him and which he often would recommend to people, you'll never see this in the Democratic mass media, was Carl Gustav Jung's autobiography called Dreams, Memories, and Reflections. Jung was one of Freud's early adherents and then broke off to form his own group. And actually, there are Jung adherents are still very, very prevalent in Europe in particular. But in America, one of the havens is in San Francisco. What was he impressed about in Jung? He loved Jung's notion of the persona and the private self. The persona, everyone has a persona, which is the self that's projected to the public. And then there's a private self, which most of the public does not see for most people. Persona comes from the Greek actors who were in the plays wore masks, and the masks was considered the persona. So as to distinguish the character, the persona, from the actor, the private self behind the mask. Trump loved this idea because all day long, Trump would show up, you know, around 8:30 or so. He'd go downstairs to Trump Organization, and at the end of and his door was open. People flooded in and out. The telephone was always ringing. It was like Fifth Avenue, except it was upstairs in an office. Once the office would close, though, he frequently would go around the corner to a Korean grocery store, get a bag of chips and some quick bites to eat, and go upstairs to a completely solitary life in the evening and uninterrupted by anyone. And particularly once, you know, bedtime came when he was married to Melania, she had her own bedroom, and he had a bedroom. He would spend several hours reading silently. And in the morning, he would read 5 or 6 newspapers, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Daily News. Many years ago, there was the Daily Mirror and a host of other newspapers. And when he would go downstairs to his office, there were clippings prepared for him. So you have what I'm portraying here is a man who had two lives, the life that everyone saw downstairs in Trump Tower or on the street where crowds used to crowd around him. They loved him in New York in the days when the media was not against him. But
yeah,
nobody really knew much about that silent evening. he did the same thing in the White House. He would disappear at 6 p.m. And people would wonder, where the hell is he? But he was in his own bedroom in the White House. He would make some telephone calls. He stopped the reading. He couldn't read anymore. But he had read quite a great deal before then. So this dynamic between the public Trump and the private Trump is something that's not fully appreciated by most opposition. And it's very important because you have to be careful not to judge the private Trump, which is the source of all his deepest feelings and thoughts, with the public expression of them, which is more like the mayhem of New York City and filled with all the contradictions in speech and dialect that most New Yorkers will understand. Even though you talk in opposites, everyone knows you have one basic idea. But outside of that realm, that persona is misunderstood. With Trump, the most prevalent mistake is judging the book by the cover. So that if he makes all sorts of, they used to say, the mean tweets, that's not particularly what the basic Donald Trump is. You can take a look at an interview that he did when he was 35. When he was 35, with Rona Barrett, he did an interview, and everything he says in that interview is consistent with his political views now. With Trump, what you hear, what you see, in many ways is what you get. He does not flip-flop like a politician. He's got one point of view, and it's never varied. He talks about globalization in that interview. He even talked about Iran, because at that time our embassy, when he was being interviewed, was, I think it was during the Carter administration, and the embassy had all American hostages. And he had his own, he had views about how to deal with Iran, which were the same views he used when he was president. So you have a man whose principles and understanding is deep within him, and he follows the two mentors of his life. In business, it was his father, and in the spiritual world, which informs his political world as well, was the Reverend Norman Vincent Peale. And one other thing I must mention to you, because there's so much dirt thrown at him about his attitudes toward women, I want to emphasize that in the Trump organization, years ago, way before there was a feminist movement, 40% of the employees and the executives were women, and women received the exact same pay as any male. And his first wife, Ivana, he put her in charge of the Plaza Hotel, which he bought. That was his Mona Lisa, and decorating his casinos in New Jersey. As one of the close associates of his, a woman named Louise Sunshine, actually an Orthodox Jewish woman, come to think of it, whose husband was a cardiologist who practiced with a friend of mine in Manhattan, she became an executive, a very popular executive in his organization, very powerful, and she pointed out that his attitude toward women was one of the things that kept her most enthralled with him. Because she said when Trump was elevating women in his organization to executive positions, no one else in New York was doing that with women, particularly with a wife. She said that many of the wealthy real estate people, their wives were not allowed even to come to the office, and most of them hadn't the vaguest idea what their husbands did all day. It was one of those super traditional situations. But with Trump, never ballyhooing about feminism, it was natural to him. Now, if you want to understand some of the psychology of that, he comes from a long line of very powerful and very competent women. That starts with his great-grandmother, who lost her husband when she had six children, and is a mm-hmm. young woman. And she had, and this is in Germany, and she had, this is this was the source of the father of Trump's father.
Mm-hmm.
This woman went into business herself and ran a winery, which is quite unusual in Germany and quite unusual for a woman. And then Trump's grandmother, Elizabeth, she lost her husband, and she had three children, when Fred Trump Sr., Trump's father, was 13 years old. She went out and worked as a seamstress. She put together money, and she developed a real estate business with her 13-year-old son, Fred Trump Sr. Fred Trump Sr., one of the things he did at by the time he was 16 or 17, they lived in Queens.
Right.
All sorts of people who never had cars suddenly had cars and needed a garage. It was his unique idea to put up a very inexpensive garage in all these little homes in Queens. But it was through his mother, Elizabeth, who banked him and worked, put money away. She formed a company called Elizabeth and Sons. That name was changed when Donald Trump came to work for his father because people became confused as to who was the son. Was it Fred Trump Sr. or was it Donald? And then Trump's grandmother was a very powerful woman, and then Fred Trump Sr. married a Scottish immigrant, the youngest from a woman who came from absolute poverty. The 10th child of 10 children came here, you know, in steerage, you know, down with the cattle, with absolutely nothing in New York, but she was gorgeous, highly intelligent. She eventually met Fred, and they married. And Trump's sister, here's another powerful woman, a retired federal judge, Judge Barry, says that in all her life, she's the oldest child, Judge Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Most intelligent woman she ever met was her own mother. And her mother was very much involved in all sorts of activities, as well as raising five children in Queens. So when it came Trump's turn with Ivana, it was very natural for him to recognize her business sense, put her in charge of the Plaza Hotel and the various casinos. And you see now that's partly why he pushed the daughter Ivanka and was very happy. Tiffany was a lawyer. He has mm-hmm. a very special, deep belief in the capacity and ability of women. They have held that family together through four generations. And this is something that is not recognized. All they talk about are these stupid things about some woman's genitalia, he grabbed her or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure what you're listening from me is probably the first time you've ever heard it, but it's all in my book. It's all in my book and a description of these extraordinary women.
Well,
way before the feminists, way before the feminists.
Trump's been going through, so because of all of this stuff, he's able to combat and have a stiff backbone to keep fighting, because of all the attacks that have been going on since he went down the Golden Escalator. And even just before that, they were doing all kinds of different things. All of it's made up, basically, and he knows it. And his mindset is still straightforward, and still he's doing it. He says his line is, they're going after me because, and I'm standing in the way because they're really going after you. And he has that patriotism and that fight in him. And his whole thing is, I'm taking all the hits because just standing away from complete communist, making this country communist or socialist. He said they went by socialism right into communism. So he's doing all that stuff, and he's there, and he's standing there, and his magnetism is, like, for example, yesterday in Pickens, South Carolina, it's like 3,000 people that live there, and he had like 75,000 people. So
yep,
his,
he definitely
did. You know, and anywhere he goes, he could fill up a football stadium in a matter of hours. And his magnetism, because he relates to his magnetism, the way he talks to people, talks with the crowd. He's part of the crowd, and that type of magnetism is what gets everybody going. He cannot be beaten unless they cheat, unless they steal it or cheat, because everybody loves him that really love him, that know him. And how does he get that type of mindset to keep fighting?
Well, you know something? I'm glad you mentioned the South Carolina talk, because I heard something in the South Carolina talk that's straight from Norman Vincent Peale and straight from Donald Trump. It was one of Peale's major points that one should never give up, never, never give up. He describes how one should never look at the problem, but only at the solution, and never, never give up. And Trump, in one of his books, has the 10 principles of success. And the 10th principle is never give up. And he says it never, never, never give up. Never. 5 times in one sentence. So yesterday in South Carolina, he talked about, where does the name of the town Pickens come from? Because that's where he was speaking, a town of 3,000 people that drew about, 70,000 people. Where did the name Pickens come from? It comes from a very key Revolutionary War general named Pickens, Brigadier General Pickens. And Pickens fought a very key battle in South Carolina, in the South, that turned the tide for the revolutionaries against the Brits in the South. And what did he say? What did he like about Pickens? He said, I love to be here in Pickens, because it was Brigadier General Pickens who said, never, never, never give up. And I knew it was coming straight out of Peale, and straight Trump talk. And he is a loner. It's both his source of his valor and a source of his difficulty. When he would retreat into the silent quiet of his bedroom for 50 years or so in Trump Tower, it was to be alone with himself, because that's where he drew his strength from. So he's like the classic American, the Lone Ranger. Who was that masked man? Come out of nowhere and rescue the town. You see that theme over and over and over in American Westerns. He's got the classic American loner who comes to town to rescue the embattled citizens. However, it also is the source of one of his greatest pains, because as a loner, and depending on that private self, he's never really part of the in-group. He can battle that outer group, the deep swamp. And when he was president, you may remember that C.O. Sulzberger, the owner and publisher of the New York Times at that time, interviewed right. Trump and actually published that interview. And one of the things that Trump said to Sulzberger, I'm sure Scarlett remembers that in the years that we grew up there, the New York Times was like the Holy Bible in New York City. He said to Sulzberger, he said, the one thing that really pains me is that I come out of Queens, which was almost like the suburbs in those days, and I on my own became president of the United States. Like, it's like a hometown boy. and you've never featured me like that. Like one of our own from the borough of Queens has become president of the United States. He was expressing the pain and agony of the loner, the outsider, who never really feels like he's accepted by the in-group. And, of course, the Democrats... Say that again, Scarlett.
I can definitely relate to him on that, yeah.
Yeah. So, at any rate, he referenced Peel. I see now we're a bit into our time. I want to make sure you have whatever questions you have.
Yeah, we're running down on time.
I have a question. Have you ever actually sat down and had a conversation with President Trump?
No, and actually, you know, I'm one of those old-time ethical guys. There's still a couple of us left. I've often thought that if I ever sat down and talked with Trump, I couldn't write the book because it would be a breach of confidentiality. And
okay.
So in a sense, I'm like an outsider also, just like the man I'm writing about. You know, and one of the things I enjoyed writing about was the hero aspect, that American figure who comes from elsewhere. You know, his father never wanted him to go into Manhattan. He begged him not to go into Manhattan. He said it was filled with those high-priced sharks. The real estate was overvalued. His father made his fortune and remained doing business in Brooklyn and in Queens. And he begged Donald not to go into Manhattan. Donald Trump worked with his father from the time he could walk. His dad took him to all the construction sites. And when he got out of college, he worked with his father in Brooklyn. The office was in Coney Island. He worked for five years with his father. And then he went into Manhattan all alone, the real outsider. Yeah. People laughed at him. But he went into very distressed areas. His first big project was redoing the Commodore Hotel, which was like a run-down rat trap by the time that area of Times Square was deadly, disgusting, horrible. It was a time when New Yorkers were fleeing New York. People don't remember that particular time, but the city was going bankrupt. It was in terrible shape, and his father said to him, redoing the Commodore Hotel was like selling tickets for the Titanic. He thought it was, first of all, he didn't want him to go into Manhattan, and then how could he do this crazy project? And everyone laughed at him, but he transformed the entire area. Every building that Trump did, he was like a hero. There's this War Memorial Stadium.
You know, I want to tell you something about Trump.
Yes.
When you say Trump can't do it, Trump says, oh, yeah, and I'm going to do it because I'm going to prove you wrong. Okay?
Scarlett,
that's his mentality. He doesn't
but
believe
Scarlett,
he
can. As
he
a New Yorker, you may remember the War Memorial skating rink was kaput.
Yes.
And for almost 6 or 7 years, they spent about $15, $20 million trying to redo it. Trump finally said he'll do it, and he'll do it for $3 million. Actually, he did it for $2.5 million, and he did it in 4 months. What the city has been unable to do.
You know what? Look at the new tower.
Almost 7 years.
When the Twin Towers dusted out, that was just such a tragedy. And it took them forever to figure out what to do with the place. And Trump brought it together, his symmetry, his talent, his know-how. And that building got built, okay? And it was because of him and his insight that happened.
You're absolutely right. Scarlett, it was the same thing with this Warmer Memorial skating rink. You know what he did? He went to Canada, the home of the great ice hockey players, and he got the best people in ice hockey to come down to New York and design and supervise that project. He did it in 4 months. In 4 months, what they couldn't do in 7 years.
Yeah.
So I agree
with
you.
Anyway,
he's out of garbage. You know?
Yeah.
Look, Look at it in Jerusalem. Look moving yeah. the
embassy.
I can't think of it. The embassy. He moved it to a building that was already in existence, and all it needed was a tweak, and bada bing, and he did it. Okay?
Definitely.
The man cuts out all the crap, and he says, let's get it done. He don't like pork. He just says, no.
Anyway, we really
get it done.
Scarlett, we're running out of time.
All right.
Okay.
Dr. Ross, I need you to tell our listeners, I wish we had more time because there's a lot of stuff we could go over. I would like to get you to come on again in a few weeks if that's possible.
Okay, we can discuss it, certainly.
Okay,
but,
the other thing is I would like to have our listeners know where to reach you, how to get the book, and so forth.
Oh, the book. The easiest way, of course, is on Amazon. But Barnes & Noble carries it online. Goodread does. But Amazon is very simple. They have a Kindle. They have an auditory. They have the hardcover. And something else they have. I'm not even sure what it is. So that's the easiest way. It's called Psychologically Sound, The Mind of Donald J. Trump. And so it's available commercially. And I'm also on Twitter, Sheldon Roth, MD1, if anyone wants to do that. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Joe.
Okay.
And Scarlett.
It's been a pleasure
Thank
to have you,
Dr.
on. Dr. Roth, what's your predictions as of right now for Trump, based on what you know?
Prediction for the election, I assume that's what you mean.
Yes.
I think if the Democrats are prevented from cheating too much, and if the Republicans learn how to cheat a little bit, he will be reelected. He will be reelected. Because of the enormity of crime, the border difficulties, the foreign catastrophes, the wars. It's a horror show. None of that occurred during his administration. So I think...
He also has the other administration, parental rights, the woke, indoctrination, recruitments of kids to be something they're not. All that type of stuff.
That's right. That's right. You know, the mainstream media is very much controlled by a Marxist framework. That is very different from the actual beliefs and feelings of the people themselves, as was demonstrated in Pickens yesterday, a town of 90-degree heat. A town of 3,000 people, you know, drew so many people from the surrounding areas that it was extraordinary. In one of the oldest American towns, truly symbolic of what I think he will unearth from the citizenry in an election. So I have great hopes. I feel if he's not elected, this country will go through a change that will be... Horrible, and could easily be taken over by a Marxist group, as was done in Russia. So it's very
not
important.
In Florida.
Say that again, Scarlett, please.
Not in Florida.
Oh, not in Florida. I know, but Scarlett, as you know, most of the country doesn't live in Florida.
Yeah.
So they would have a problem.
But I do.
I know
well,
you
you're
do.
Always
I know
welcome
you do.
To come.
Well, unfortunately, I live in the opposite place. I live in California. You can't imagine how incredible this place is. You just have to
get under Newsom. Oh yeah.
Anyway,
right,
we got a couple minutes left.
Okay.
I want to thank you, Dr. Ross. I want to thank you again
July
for coming.
Yes, a good
Happy
July
4th
to you both and to all
doctor.
Your listeners.
Yeah, happy July 4th, and thank you again for coming on. And we're gonna get you on for a little longer, because there's a lot to go on, and you're very, very interesting in the knowledge and everything. And I guarantee our listeners, they learned a lot in just the short time that you've been on.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Okay, bye.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a good night.
Good night. Bye-bye now.
A good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Dr.
Shelton Roth, and I suggest everybody to go and get the book, Psychologically Sound, The Mind of Donald J. Trump, and you
Scarlett
can do it on
Butler.
Amazon.
This is Scarlett Butler wishing everybody a happy July 4th, Independence Day. Come on, Patriots, celebrate. This is Scarlett saying have a good night. God bless you, and I'll be back on Wednesday. And we'll have a post July 4th. Bye, everybody.
And again, this is Joe Golner, your host. Thank you, everyone in the chat room. Thank you for all the listeners around the world. Thank you for Newsmax and other platforms that simulcast us tonight and what they call Travel Time Back, so you can hear it again on archives. I want to thank you. We'll see you again on Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. on the Truth Is Out There, Voice of the People radio show, on the Truth Is Out There, Voice of the People media network. You can check us out on our website at thetruthisthetruth.net. That's thetruthisthetruth.net. Good night, everybody, and have a very blessed night, and have a happy 4th, and we'll see you on the 5th.
Just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, and New York to LA, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American, where at least today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Good night, America, and celebrate the 4th, our Independence Day, and we got to stand up and be counted and fight to keep our independence. So get up there and stand up and be counted, and happy Independence Day.